श्रीला गुरुदेव की
जय।
श्री सद्बुज गौरांग महाप्रभु की
जय।
श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की
जय।
श्री चैतन्य धाम की
जय।
गौर भक्त वृंद की
जय।
गौर परमानंद हरि हरि वो। सो प्रणाम टू ऑल ऑफ यू, गुड इवनिंग। हियर वी आर अगेन ट्राइंग टू to share Hari Katha in the context of Ista Goshti today, which basically means questions and answers, one of the most usual, typical methods in which we can support each other, basically. That's one of the most basically substantial expressions of something quite substantial called Sadhu Sangha. By hearing, presenting questions, trying to reply, and trying to... It's a participatory way of engaging in Hari Katha. I mean, Hari Katha is not a one-way street, although it may seem so because of the size of my seat. But that's not at all. No. This is just external formality, but internally all of us are equally participating in this sacred exercise and exchange of trust and hearts called Shravan, Kirtan, Satsanga, Ista Goshti. So, I don't know if you have any questions that you would like to share today, topics you may like to hear about in an expanded form. Again, the words coming. You are invited to. To present, whatever. Frodo has something to say. I'm Nora?
Can you tell this Krishna's different ages in Vrindavan, like this? Kaisora,
Krishna's different ages?
Kaumara and Pauganda and Kaisora ages.
Yeah.
Briefly, what he does. And the question is that when we have affinity to certain age, are we eternally serving Krishna in that age?
Mm.
So that is like different dimensions where he's always in one age. Or
Okay. So I'll repeat just in case the ones online didn't get to hear the question. So here Nora is asking if we can share some words about Krishna's different ages in Vrindavan and according to the different, also some words regarding the different modes of service corresponding with the different ages, and if there is different dimension of the Leela, if you will, in which those who have that particular affinity will serve that particular age, if you will, of Krishna, that of that particular Krishna in that particular age, if you will. So, of course, in very general terms, we could generally hear about three ages, which is Kumara, Pauganda, and Kishore. Sometimes an extra age is added, like from 15 onwards, he's Jovana, or but eternally young. But generally, Kishore is the term that used also sometimes, Nitya Kishore. So Kumara means, in a general way, Krishna's, when Krishna is born. Here we are speaking about some chronological unfolding. So let's speak first, before, from that perspective, which is the perspective of the Bhoma Leela on earth. Because it is said that in Golok Vrindavan, in the Aparikat Leela, in the Nitya Leela, Krishna is not being born. It's not like learning crawling and learning to walk and doing all the successive things that one does. I mean, one, not to compare fully with Krishna, but his Leela is not Leela, human-like. So there is some similarity. So in the Golok, in the Aparikat, there is no chronological unfolding, but there is something called Nitya Sthiti, or permanent situation, which of course we will go there in a minute. But going back here on earth, Krishna appears and he performs his exploits, his Leela, divine Leela. So he's born, and gradually all these different particular chronological unfoldings come. No? So there mainly, Acharyas will speak about three ages, and these three ages correspond with three main sentiments that basically constitute the main emotional makeup of the Braj. And the three ages are Kumar, which roughly is Krishna from birth to 5 years. Then we have Poganda, which in general will be from 6 to 10 years. And then we have Kishore, which is basically from 11 to 15 years. Although we will hear again from that on, basically, Krishna always remains as an eternal adolescent, which in this world, if you're an eternal adolescent, that's a derogatory term. He's an eternal adolescent. He's never growing. He should mature. But Krishna remains eternal adolescent, and that's not a problem, as we said the other day. There are some similarities with Krishna's Leela, but we cannot just try to imitate what Krishna is doing. It won't work. So in that sense, it's human-like. It's not totally human. As we said the other day, Krishna is appearing whenever he likes, doing whatever he likes, however he likes, whenever he likes, and everyone likes him. Try you to do that. Well, today I will do whatever I like. If Brigu tells me to wash the dishes, no, I won't do this. If Saravaki tells me to, whatever, take Frodo for a walk, I will do it, but whenever I like. And to do the offering, the altar, however I like, I will do it. I won't respect any Hari Bhakti Vilas and all that, this stuff. I will do it however I like. I don't think that everyone will like you if you behave in that way. So Krishna knows how to do everything, however, whenever, wherever he likes, in such a way that everyone likes him. So similarly, he performs certain actions similar to our own chronological unfolding, but only similar. Similar enough as so we as humans can establish this emotional bond with his Leela and feel, we have something in common, even from the perspective we are now. And from there we can start to conceive and project some form of possibility in connection with the Godhead, which is not that big that we feel overwhelmed by his bigness, by his greatness, and we feel like discouraged about how big he is and how small we are, and how Aishwaric he is and how less Aishwaric we are, and creates a very big gap in which we do not feel that much prospect and identification with him in eternity. So Krishna Leela helps to bridge that gap. So he has these three ages, but again, he remains eternal adolescent, Nitya Kishore, generally. Although in his Leela, he performed pastimes on earth till 125 years. So you generally don't find anyone reaching that age, in Kali at least. But even if you found someone in Dwapara reaching that age, they will look like eternal adolescent youth at 125 years. I wouldn't say that. But Krishna did, again. He had 125 years, but he remained eternally youthful. Which, again, are different ways of saying what we were explaining today and these days with Brahma's prayer. Krishna's form is transcendental, is beyond time, is beyond age. Tomorrow we will see in detail all this. Krishna's form is beyond the six main transformations that the body goes through, being born, some growth, some maintenance, some byproducts, some decay, dissolution. Every human body is going through all these stages, but not Krishna. So, even if it seems so, that's an interesting point. Huh? So, these three ages, Kumar, Poganda, and Kishore, correspond with three different modes of service that somehow predominate in connection to. And these three centers, as Meghu Maharaj likes to tell them, that he also connects them with the natural chronological unfolding that happens in the 10th canto in the Bhagavatam, describing Krishna's Leela on earth, which will begin, of course, with his birth, with his Kumar Leela as a child, as an infant, then with his Poganda Leela, and then with his Kishore Leela. So you have three main, as he would like to say, centers, emotional centers, or main Leelas, even if you will, that will show which is the main prominent emotional feature at that particular age. So when Krishna is an infant, again, here comes the emotional bond that we can establish with him. So instead of asking about Krishna, we can ask ourselves, when you were 3, 4, 2 years, which was your main social circle? Don't tell me Instagram or stuff like this, although nowadays maybe 4-year-olds already have their account. I've seen sometimes their parents open an account to their baby who has 2 months. He has no clue that he already is in Facebook and he may have 3,000 friends. That's another reality. Let's go back here. So when you were 2, 3 years, which were your main emotional connections?
Parents.
Your parents. Now, at 2, 3 years, you still do not have friends, like my Guru Maharaj will say. Try to remember your friends when you were 2 years. You cannot remember because you had no friends, basically, in one sense. You were not hanging out with boys and playing 1 year, 2 years. Still, Vatsalya was the predominant feature. Mom and dad, especially mom. But dad was there as well. So as it applies to us, it applies to Krishna in his Leela as well. And so his Kumar Leela, his first 5 years, revolve around the love of Nanda and Yashoda mostly. Mostly Yashoda. Again, she's like the ultimate figure representing the Vatsalya camp. And a very important central Leela in this connection, of course, is the Damodar Leela, which is described in the 8th, 9th chapters of the 10th canto mostly. So that's like the Vatsalya center connected to Kumar age. And of course, we have so many other Leelas as well, Krishna doing certain mischief as an infant, all the things that we know, stealing butter, even as an infant, yeah, he started to do that. Even he doesn't need friends to be mischievous, he can do it by itself, and then with friends he has a whole band that will support him to increase his thievery. but yeah, mostly this revolves around Yashoda Maya. And then we go to the second period, which is Poganda, and Poganda is characterized by the next emotional chapter in our life, which is friends. Well, when we have 6, 7, 8, 9, we start to have friends to go out with them, and our parents are no longer a preoccupation. We have left them behind, in one sense. Of course, they are there, we love them, and we depend on them because they are the ones earning money to sustain us. Meanwhile, we're playing with our friends. They are ones who are cooking. So when we are hungry after playing, we have something on the plate. But apart from that, we will be absorbed in just play as much as possible and hanging with our friends. And your mom will come and say, come back. Time to get bath and play and take dinner. You are like, no. I want to remain here with my friends playing. A little bit more. Like this. So the emotional center has shifted from Vatsalya to Sakya, to friendship. So the parents are there. Again, they had not disappeared. It's not that you forget you have parents, but your friends come to play a predominant role. So that has to do with this Sakya, fraternal experience. And we have some sections in the Bhagavatam corresponding with that as well. In the preceding chapters, chapter 12, no, from chapters 8, to 10, 11, something, we have Vatsalya camp, then 12, Agasur Leela, 13, Brahma Vimohan Leela, 15, the Nukasura Leela. All these revolve around Krishna with his friends, going to the pastures, cowherding, picnic, different games, different jokes with among them. So that's the second one. And the third one is, again, you are more than that, you are entering teenagehood. So you fall in love. Cupid makes his appearance in your life, basically. Before that, it was just some tale that your mom told you when you were a kid, and something like Cupid and the arrows, and now you are walking the talk. You have heard. So somehow you feel like, oh. In general. That will happen. That will be the romantic chapter, and at that point your parents are less important in one sense, and your friends are no longer that important either, no? Because you fell in love, you have your partner, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, and your mind is in that direction. Your mind is like captured by the Madhurya side of the equation. And try to remember in your own cases. At least most of us have gone through that. Not in my case. I'm a weird case. I'm a weirdo. I have to accept that. Anyhow. So, Madhurya rasa, basically, the conjugal, romantic side of the equation. So Krishna is no exception to that. So in his Kishore age, adolescence, his main emotional range at that time will revolve around his relationship with the gopis, Braja Devis. And of course, then we will have many chapters in the Bhagavatam depicting that. Chapters like the Gopi Vastra Harana Lila, and some other chapters anticipating the, of course, the central Rasa Panchadhyay, the five chapters on Rasa Lila, chapters like Venu Gita, and so many other Gitas that come before, during, and after Rasa Lila, Venu Gita, Pranaya Gita, Gopi Gita, Jugala Gita, Viraha Gita, Brahmar Gita, all this center around this Madhurya, which of course is kind of a emotional zenith, presented by the Gaudiya Sampradaya, highest reach of sacred aesthetic rapture. And Rasa Lila, of course, again, these five chapters are kind of the crown of the Bhagavatam. No? Sometimes they are compared to five pranas. They are five life airs running through the body, pranas, and they are compared to these five chapters of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, from 29 to 33. So, like, all the whole Bhagavatam is pointing to that zenith, and all the rest of the Bhagavatam is reflecting back on that zenith, as we mentioned briefly yesterday. All these Dwarka Lila, Mathura Lila, Uddhava Gita, philosophical statements at the end of the Bhagavatam, and all this other list of avatars and Lila before, all this is whether preparing the ground for Rasa Lila so you don't misconstrue such a sacred narrative, and then after Rasa Lila, making sure that you, just in case, did not misconstrue that sacred narrative. Like making a point that can be easily misconstrued. At first sight, it seemed just like the extreme opposite of what it actually is for the uninformed eye. So that's why you have, I don't know, the Bhagavatam has 18,000 verses and the Rasa Panchadhyaya may have, whatever, 180 verses, let's say. So 1% of the whole work is Rasa Panchadhyaya. So the other 99% is there to give context, in one sense, for you understand the erotic life of the Absolute. So that's connected to the Kishore Lila. So that first part of your question, and actually the question, main question is, if I do not misunderstood, if those who have different affinities will worship Krishna in these particular ages, or if there will be some specific, like, dimensions, I think you used that word, in which a corresponding form of Krishna will be there according to one's disposition. I think my Guru Maharaj recently spoke about that. If I'm not mistaken, someone asked him that question, or maybe I just heard one class from him where he was speaking about that. I cannot tell you. But we could say briefly that here we have this idea of super subjective reality. Now you have this subjective conditioned perspective of things, as we spoke today in the morning. Like you put your lens and you see everything according to material attachment. Then we have the objective yogic perspective, impartiality on the basis of everything being consciousness. But then you have what Srila Siddha Maharaj will call the super subjective view of reality, which means you are appreciating reality through the lens of bhakti or through the lens of devotional affinity, which could be defined as some type of bias or some type of partiality that Krishna himself will show. Samaham sarva bhuti sunam medvesya stina priya je bhajanti tumam bhaktya maite teshu chapyaham, he says. I am impartial towards everyone. I do not hate nor especially love any particular being, But no, first half of the verse is Paramatma speaking, but then comes Bhagavan. Whenever you hear some but or something like that, now comes Bhagavan biased toward his devotees. But those who worship in a very unique way, I'm especially inclined towards them. Because they are especially inclined towards me. So you could say Bhagavan is partial to his devotees because his devotees are partial towards him. But that partiality is in terms of bhakti, not of mundane, calculative exploitation. So my point is that gives rise to a type of subjectivity, which is not the subjective perception of things that we have when we are a bada jiva, conditioned souls, but when we love. For example, again, the love of a mother. The mother loves his son or his child, let's be more specific. And maybe the child has 125 years. Well, the mother maybe have a little bit more in that case, for the example to apply. But for her, the child will be the child. No? That happened with Krishna. When Yashoda saw Krishna in the solar eclipse in Kurukshetra, at that time, Krishna was more than 100 years. I don't know how many years was Yashoda, but she was there. I need to say that when she saw Krishna, she didn't saw a 125-year-old king that she had like to bow at the distance and offer some whatever bureaucratic salutation or something. Just milk started to pour from her breast, which is one of the sattvic bhavs of Vatsalya Prem, and she took Krishna on her lap, and she started to give Krishna breastfeed Krishna, who was more than 100 years old. So again, it may sound bizarre. Now you try to imagine that in your mind, and it doesn't fit. But here we are speaking about a particular case of, again, devotional bias, in the sense of just so this bias, if you will, transcendentally speaking, inclined to see Krishna in a particular way. No matter what objective knowledge you want to bring to the table in front of her. No, but he's God, as Uddhava tried his best. No? Uddhava tried to, let's be objective, then the devotees came. Uddhava say, let's try to be objective. No, your child is God. You are so fortunate, you love them as your child, but he's God. Let's be impartial, let's consider what Shastra is saying. But for Yashoda, she had no ears for that. She had no ears for that. Says, for Nanda, he had no ears for that. He basically said, I thought you were a wise person. You were known, you were famous as being very, very sober personality, but now that you are telling me that my child is God, I can realize you are not that wise. So what I mean by this is that Krishna, objectively speaking, may be standing there with some age, but every devotee, according to their mood and bhav, they will see Krishna according to the age that corresponds with their bhav. Now they have bhava netra. They have an eye made of bhav. Not only an eye, everything is made, the bhav, the whole body is made of ecstatic emotion. So the scripture generally say, Krishna is Nitya Kishore in Golok Vrindavan. In the Aprakat Lila, he remains eternally like a 16-year-old eternal youth. Like implying there is no chronological unfolding, but also he doesn't get beyond that. But at the same time, there is place for every devotee will see him according to the particular bhav. Can we close the door 1 second? Meanwhile, they're accommodating, right? Thank you. So that's the point. No? It's not that Krishna is born in Golok Vrindavan, but it's for Yashoda, Krishna seems like a baby, basically, no? Like a little child. She will have that psychology to her. So, as we say today, beauty lies in the eye of the beholder. No? And there are different types of beauty and different types of beholders. So Yashoda, we behold Krishna with a particular type of prem that will make Krishna appear in that form to her eyes. Try to analyze this point. But you could say, But Maharaj, but Krishna, objectively speaking, he's 16-year-old eternal in Vrinda. Yeah, but the objective reality is not the all in all. Mm. Ultimately, we have this subjective experience. Mm. Like we will say, we can say Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam, and Krishna is the source of Narayan. But you go to Vaikuntha and try to sell that one there. And try to tell Jai and Bijai or some of the Vaikuntha Vasis. Actually, Narayan is an anga, it's an aspect of Krishna. And they will say, no. It's the opposite, the other way around. Krishna is an avatar of Narayan. And they have a way to explain that and to substantiate their feelings. So there is place for that to happen. And both of them are right, subjectively speaking. We could say objectively speaking, Krishna is this, we can explain, but subjectively speaking, that's another thing. And that's why Krishna Das Kaviraj and many of our acharyas will say that. Each devotee will feel my relationship with Krishna is the best. And every one of them is correct, he says. It's not that there's one that is right and all the other ones are wrong. And we have to convince them about the real only one thing that they have to surrender to. So that's experience in Vrindavan. The particular features that define each age of Krishna, I mean, you have to understand the point. Each age of Krishna is inseparable from a particular type of bhav. And Krishna adopts a form according to the particular type of bhav which exists in the devotee. So it goes without saying that if he's being contemplated, my point is, one famous example, Mala Nama Sanirninam Narabaram Strinam Smaru Murtinam, and so on. This famous verse from the Bhagavatam when Krishna is entering the arena of Kamsa. And many people are looking, watching him. And this verse is basically one of the foundation for Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, for Krishna Binakila Rasamrita Murtihi. And this verse shows how different peoples are seeing Krishna as very differently, while the same Krishna is entering the arena. Krishna is entering the arena, how they are saying them, the wrestlers, they are seeing them as a thunderbolt. The gopas are seeing them as their relative. The ladies are seeing Krishna as Cupid personified. Kamsa is seeing him as death personified, which is pretty different than from Cupid. It's another death, Cupid in itself, but... And so on. The yogis are seeing him of the absolute truth. And different people are seeing the same person through the lens of their particular bhav, emotion. But Krishna is the same. It's not that many Krishnas are appearing for one and the other. So Krishna is the same. But you cannot separate that same Krishna from the eye that is contemplating him, from love of Krishna in this case. Krishna and love of Krishna are inseparable. So you cannot speak about Krishna without love of Krishna. When you're speaking about some Krishna, you have to attach a particular love, and a particular Krishna will come as a result of that. So if we want to consider that as different dimensions in Vrindavan, okay, no problem. It's like dimension, different types of perception through which different devotees will be relating to him. They were speaking as Krishna as a baby. That's how the show they will be receiving him. Welcome. Thanks. Thanks for coming. Okay. Now you are outside the womb. Last year he was inside.
Yes, that's true.
Now he came to officially present him. Yeah, he's happy. Okay. He or she?
She.
She.
Aina.
Aina.
Yes.
Okay. Welcome, Aina. Pleasure to meet you. So, like we were saying the other day, no, like when Krishna is returning every single night to his quarters, you can come closer so we can have more space. Yeah. So when Krishna is returning on the Nitya Lila every morning to his house, the whole night he was spending with Radha and the gopis, no. But nobody knew, so he eventually returns his sneaks, you say, sneaking to the window and entering his room. And the next day, or a few minutes after, Yashoda thinks the next day, but a few minutes after, Yashoda enters the room and sees Krishna's. He starts to wake up Krishna, and Krishna cannot wake up because, of course, he's just slept 5 minutes or something. And she's thinking, why you are so late for you? It's so difficult for you to wake up. You slept the whole night. And Krishna's like, And she starts to see some bruises. Bruises, you say? In Krishna's body. No? And of course, all these bruises are coming from the battle of Cupid he had during last night with the gopis. Scratchings and bitings and so on. But Yashoda cannot see that because she doesn't have that DNA. She cannot conceive that my boy is having some girlfriend, basically. So she can just only think like, how many times did I tell Sridham and all his friends not to wrestle so strongly with him to the ground? But they never hear me. These boys, as Guru Maharaj will say, boys will be boys. No. And they keep throwing him on the ground when they are wrestling and all these bruises are coming from their playing so intensely. I will speak to them again later today. So that's her lens again. She's not seeing objective truth, if you will. But her subjective vision is part of ultimate reality. So how much you can challenge that and tell, actually Yashoda was wrong. So that's how this interplays in the dynamics of the Leela. So some thoughts about the question, I hope that helps. What else? Any other question? Some other topic?
I have a question.
Yes.
Which is not so straightforward.
Baruch Shabbat.
If I may connect two topics. One is that in Vrindavana Leela, I have heard that Sri Radha is kind of afraid of Sri Balaram, that he will somehow come between her and Sri Krishna.
Okay, continue.
Because of his being Krishna's older brother and having to make sure Krishna is somehow being proper.
Well behaved.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And the other topic is in Japa, we have the three names, Hare, Krishna, Rama.
Mm-hmm.
And those may well be Sri Radha, Sri Krishna, Sri Balaram. I'm wondering, can one meditate like that? Or is it Rasa Bhas if Sri Balaram is Sri Radha?
We had to get the Ram out of the way in our japa or something? How to get away with Ram in the japa? Can we change the Maha Mantra? Well, I wouldn't say that Radha is afraid of Balaram because she may get in the way and like I kind of portraying him as a fear, how to say, fear.
Fear factor.
Yeah, well, that's not the idea, no? Because there is love, there is a type of unique love between, of course, Radha and Balaram. They have deep affection for each other. And Balaram is, of course, aware of the whole situation. It's not that he doesn't know, but he has to play his role, no? So he's Krishna's elder brother, as we know. A few days elder, but elder brother at the end. Especially out of Yashoda's labeling on him. Doji, Doji, Doji. So after a few days of pounding the Doji post, okay, Balaram is okay, I'm Doji. No, 8 years older, but Doji. Eight days older. Doji. Doji means elder brother. So he's a Mariat Purush in Krishna's life, the one who takes care that Krishna is not mischieving. But as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, he generally reports when Krishna is doing some mischief. When, for example, he was eating dirt, as we know, and Balaram goes to Yashoda, you know, with his friends and report back, Krishna ate dirt. So Yashoda called Krishna and say, your friends are telling that you ate dirt. Krishna said, no, that's not true. They are envious of me because I always defeat them on wrestling. So now they want to defame me, and they are just reporting me on you, but actually I didn't do anything like that. Of course, we know what happens after that. Krishna opens the mouth and says, hey, you want to see earth? Okay, there is some earth here. Planets and plants. But he reports all the things, but he never reports Krishna's sneaking with the gopis. But as Maguraj says, his service in that moment is to look to another direction. Oh, something interesting is going on there. And Krishna is like, go into Radhakund at midday. And he has to take care of all the gopas who are not priyanarma sakas for a good amount of the day as a service to Radha, basically, you could say. But of course, I get your point. The union between Radha and Krishna cannot happen if Balaram is present there. That's why, ideally, on an altar, you won't have Radha and Krishna and Balaram somehow there, because that may create some interruption of the mood. Imagine if the two lovers are there and the elder brother of the male lover comes into the scene. It's like rasavas, basically. It's a proper mixture of mellows. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't say that Radha is afraid of Balaram. No? Like, because the word afraid may portray him in negative light in relation to how Radha feels towards Baladev. Mm-hmm. Because again, she knows that he knows. And she trusts him in his criteria. And Balaram is pretty expert, as we know. I mean, he really knows how to accommodate lots of things because he's in between the two. I mean, again, remember, he knows about this romantic side of Krishna's life. So, and Radha and Krishna know that he knows. And on the other side is the Vatsalya camp, projecting on him so much responsibility. Now you have to watch out Krishna's mischief and report whatever he does. So he's in between these two sides, now the Madhurya camp, the Vatsalya camp, and he navigates that very skillfully, we could say. So in one sense, we shouldn't say she's like afraid of him, in the sense of even that he may fail to do his part. He does it very swiftly. Or she's not afraid of him, like he will... Where is Krishna? For maybe he met with Radha. I have to interrupt. And that's not Balaram. That may be Jatila or something like that, of course. if you want someone like this, there will be that type of person. Jatila, Kutila, this camp. No? But Baladev is not that. So that on one side. And going to the Mahamantra, in connection to that we have these three words. Krishna, Radha, and Balaram. Actually, the three words of the Mahamantra can be understood in many ways. And generally, Ram won't be understood as Balaram if Hare is understood as Radha. Because that may create again some... Because the idea of the Mahamantra... Again, depending your affinity, but let's say one affinity, maybe you have affinity towards Madhurya Bhav or Manjari Bhav, even more specifically. Well, let's say Madhurya Bhav in general. So generally, Hare Krishna Ram, Balaram is not included in that equation, because this dynamics of Hare Krishna, Krishna, that will represent also the dynamics of union and separation among the divine couple. So Hare Krishna will refer to the union of Radha and Krishna. Radha, because Hare Krishna is another way of saying Radha Krishna. And when we say Krishna, Krishna, Hare, Hare, sometimes some sadhus have depicted that they are in separation now. So Radha is calling Krishna, 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 and Krishna is calling Radha, Hare, Hare. And then Hare Ram, Radhisham, Radhisham, they are getting back together. Ram, Ram, Hare, Hare. Again, separation and union and separation. And union, and that's the eternal dynamics through which the love gets further upgraded without limit. So in that case, Hare will represent Radha, Krishna will represent Krishna, and Ram will represent another name of Krishna in connection to Raman or Radha Raman, he who gives pleasure to Radha. Now, he who is subservient to her, if you will. He who lives for pleasing her. So Ram can be conceived as such if you have affinity towards Ram Bhakti, Ram can be conceived as Ramachandra. And there's people who think of that. And if you have affinity towards Sakya Bhav, of course Ram can be conceived as Baladev. And Hare will be related to Hari, to Krishna. And Krishna will relate to Krishna. So there are different ways of addressing the Maha Mantra. Even devotees who have affinity towards Manjari Bhav, who are especially focusing in giving solace, support and pleasure to Sri Radha exclusively, they will conceive the three names of the Maha Mantra as names of Krishna. And they will conceive singing those three names of Krishna to Radha. So they will think, well, singing Maha Mantra, they are singing Krishna's names to Radha, so she can receive hope and support in separation from Krishna and give further pleasure. So Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Ram will mean for them Krishna, 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 sung for Radha's pleasure. So my point is there are different possibilities. It's not just that it's one single interpretation of each word, but whatever the interpretation we receive, we chant, it should be combined in a way that is not promoting improper mixing. So I would say that if you're chanting to Radha and Krishna, Balaram won't be happy to be there, basically. Of course, he's there in the background allowing that to happen. But if you are calling Radha and Krishna, you're called Balaram, I mean, that would create a problem. Radha and Krishna say, Balaram, Balaram, can, no, why are you calling me? Well, this was not the moment to call me now. But of course, if you have affinity towards Sakya Bhav, you know, like there is one definition of each one of the 16 words of the Maha Mantra according, if I'm not mistaken, to Subal or something. Subal's reading of the Maha Mantra, each one of these 16 words will be all tied to Krishna and Balaram, Krishna and Balaram, Krishna and Balaram. Radha is not present there, again, overtly. All of them are present there always in some way or another. But the more we progress, the more we will become aware of this. Details, and in the beginning that may sound like a technicality, but in practice you will need to focus that in a more and more specific way, and in a way that is properly combined. Again, it's not that you can just bring this and that, put that in a zzz, and make a smoothie, a rasa smoothie or something. I mean, it has to be properly digested. So that's why Swarup Damodara will filter all the presentation that will come to Mahaprabhu, just to take care that nobody will bring any Hapasiddhanta or Rasabhas, some poem, many well intention written, but improperly mixed. Mahaprabhu will hear that and become so disturbed. And again, for us it may seem like, oh, he's too eccentric. Why disturb for some improper me? But the point is, that's the price of becoming a connoisseur in something, whatever, in whatever field. Now, the more you develop this like very delicate and expert way of relishing something, if something is not in place, you will notice like immediately. No? Like for example, with music. Now, if you are a very rasika, in the context of secular arts, if you follow Bharat Natya Shastra, and you know how to relish drama, music and dance and all the proper presentation and mixing, or with music, specific ragas and the ascending movements, descending movements and the alap. And if you know how everything should fall in place, if everything is playing nicely, the advantage is that you will relish that more than anyone else. Anyone else will say, that was a nice song. But they are not able to appreciate like the details of that. They will just see a nice song. But the other person will understand, this note is not in the scale, but he played in such a way that create this unique creative tension to whatever. No? But the price to be a connoisseur is that if something is not properly presented, you will be greatly disturbed. Everything has its pros and cons. No? So this was applicable to Mahaprabhu being a rasika, being a relisher of rasa, and when something was not properly present, he will be thrown into an ocean of disturbance. So that's why Swarup Damodar had that service, very intimate service, although it may seem something like superficial or something, but not. He was doing one of the most crucial services, which was to filter the presentation so Mahaprabhu's bhav will not be disturbed. Like Srila Prabhupada will say once, do not disturb the mood of Gaur. Do not disturb the mood. He's in a particular mood. Do not disturb that. I mean, we are actually to nourish that, to serve that, so that keeps increasing. What to speak of disturbing that? And again, in the beginning, we may not be very much aware of that, and still we may have some concocted notions of some things that are not properly mixing on some level. And in certain stage, okay, that may not be that harmful. But as we progress, we will feel the need of further specificity, because that's our path. Path Raganuga Bhakti is, I like to call it, the path of specificity. It's not a generic path. It's very specific. And the more you progress, it becomes more specific. So for some people, it may sound like too whimsical. You are very too specific. You are becoming too specific. But there's a need. The more you start to, like any art, if you will, you develop yourself in an art, and you will develop in terms of specificity. It will become more specific. Of course, it will become more broad and more deep and more specific in one particular direction. You cannot avoid doing that. And those who are not there may see you like, you are too weird. Why you insist so much in that detail? Just leave it like that. And you say, no, I will die if I leave it like that. My life depends on that detail. The other person is like, oh my God, you are too extravagant or something. But it's very subjective. No? So my point with this is, again, there is place at certain time to maybe not entering too much into some of these details, but it's, on some level it's good that we show some concern about possible readings of the Maha Mantra or some other things and how to combine them properly so that it create the desired effect. So I hope that helps. Okay. Something else? We have some minutes.
Mahaprabhu? It's still broad of a subject, but kind of like related on the previous one, or the, but the, you know, the specific nature of of bhajan, or this is like a topic that has, I wouldn't say bothered me, but that I found interesting, like the, like this, that one might consider like a crucial difference between the so-called orthodox Gaudiya lineages compared to the line of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati expanding to ISKCON and the branches of the Gaudiya Math. This practice of the guru indicating or inspecting the specific details of their internal, the nature of their internal bhajan, as far as, you know, the concept of Siddha Pranali goes. And, because, you know, of course, I have a very general conception of, like, how it's come to be in, you know, this sort of orthodox lineages. But, like, historically, like, because, you know, this practice, it's like, you know, I'd say, like, theologically or just practically, it's quite a crucial difference of the, compared to as the guru quite early on giving the disciple, the sadaka, these, you know, indications of their internal, you know, nature to practice with those details, as compared to, you know, guiding the disciple on a more general level and these details of their internal practice arising, like, eventually through that, or I would say, like, it was Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati who said that our Siddha Pranali is, you know, the Shikshastaka, or
in the syllables of the Mahamantra also, levels
in this. So I just like it, just thinking like historically how this come to be, because like especially like in the contemporary world with you know, sort of like more, I would say like information about the different, you know, the, like the richness of the varieties of the Gaudiya tradition are more available. This might seem confusing to practitioners. Yeah. So how it's come to be, or what are the nuances or the differences of these approaches?
Okay. We have to extend the retreat for 3 weeks, basically.
On a very general level, you can touch on this if you...
No, no, it's a good question, of course, an important point, and I'm so sorry that I won't be as extensive as the topic deserves, because that's a long answer. I remember we did some series, I mean, just to give some homework, if you wanted... 5-class answer. We gave a series of lectures on the Raghavarma Chandrika some years ago. And I think I did spend like 5 or 6 lectures only on that particular section because it felt necessary. So I may share some very brief points from that section, basically. Which, of course, we have this particular... approaches, and interestingly, historically speaking, you have this, what Bhaktivinoda Thakur called the Bahir Panta and the Atam Panta in the Jaiva Dharma, and he connects them back to Raghunath Das Goswami and to Bhakreshwar Pandit, respectively. So he will say, Raghunath Das Goswami's path is through Srinam, everything will be revealed. But of course, you have to have proper faith in the Achintya Shakti of Srinam, as we spoke today about the Achintya Shakti. Krishna has Achintya Shakti, Srinam is no different from Krishna, so it's full of Shakti. All Shaktis are there, so Srinam can reveal everything. That's an important basic point, but we should not forget that. No? Like, I mean, if we have proper faith and approach to Srinam, everything will come there. Nam namakari bahudha niya sharva shaktis. All shaktis are there. Achintya shakti included. And there is nothing more important for us than Srinam. So also there is this particular point that by overemphasizing some other angas or ways to approach bhakti, we may run the risk of downplaying the role of Srinam, which will make Srinam something secondary or something, and that's bordering nama parad, if you will. So that on one side. Or like to say, okay, well, one of the aparads is to consider an exaggeration, the praise that we find in Shastra related to Srinam, and feel the need of many other things apart from. That's a way of putting it. So with this, I'm not condemning the process of sometimes called Shita Pranali or Ekadash Bhav, or sometimes called Manjari Bhav or Manjari Sadhana, and so many other designations, which interestingly we do not see them overtly described in the life of Mahaprabhu, as he himself been practicing that, nor in the books of the Goswamis, although there are a few verses that could be read as such. And eventually we could see some development of that system, if you will, in time, from some few verses, Siva Sadaka Rupina Siddha Rupina Chatrahi. There's a parallel verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Siddha Deha Chinti Bhava, and so on. And then with some other authors, like even Narottam Das Thakura, he will speak more specifically about that. We will start to have these paratis by Gopal Guru Goswami and Dhyanachandra Goswami, more methodically establishing some particular way of conducting yourself in that meditation. So I wouldn't say that one is bona fide and the other one is bogus or something, because also that has happened, like some people claiming the classical situation, which is, of course, one is bona fide, the other is bogus, and of course the bona fide is the one I am in. And the bogus are those on the other side of the river or something, whatever may be the case. The two will be saying the same thing to one another. We are the one of us. You are the bogus. I won't cross the river. I won't touch the other side of the land. And vice versa. And unfortunately, that's historically has created a considerable bridge and distance between what we call sometimes traditional Gaudiya Vaishnav lineages and the offshoots coming from Gaudiya Math. No? I've felt that distance many times. You can really still feel. Of course, there are individual cases where that's not happening, but in general, there is some considerable distance in big part because of this difference of opinion. But again, there's nuances among the followers of each lineage as well. For example, I know some Vaishnavas who belong to these traditions where they eventually receive this particular information, and they tell me this is not something that is ideally given in the very beginning. So that's another consideration. It's not that, because sometimes we hear they are receiving this confidential information from day one. Not necessarily, of course, in some cases that may be the case, and we won't agree with that. But a certain stage of practice, that can happen. I mean, Bhaktivinoda Thakur received that. And he gave that also, at least to some. So we cannot also be in denial of that. We belong to the Bhaktivinoda Pariva. So we were not just about rejecting all that, because we will be rejecting something that our bhakti not receive. But I will say that the main point here, because I was speaking and you connected this with my point of specificity in bhajan, I was not only referring to this particular aspect, you know, like with specificity regarding information, if you will. Because, to be honest, in some cases that will be information in the beginning. And I've seen devotees who are leading a sadhaka life, but it's not that extraordinary. When suddenly they receive all this, if you will, extraordinary content. You are this, and this is your service. And I always wonder, like, how do they deal with this information and the particular stage they are in, which is not nishta, what to speak of higher stages. And how do they deal with that so they do not become dysfunctional in terms of personality and a sense of identity. And I've seen many ending in that direction. As I was speaking with one devotee recently, he was telling me, yeah, if you don't have the adhikar to really deal with that information in a realistic way, that information that you are receiving, one sense will be taken by you as an upadhi only, as a designation. Okay, now I'm in Manjari, now my name is this, now my dress is that. But if you don't have the insight to really walk that talk, live that still remains as an external designation while you are still identifying yourself even mostly as something else. I'm a man, and I'm a husband, and I have this job, and I'm a manjari, and how that coexists inside. What we were saying was that in some cases, this information will be given more like a form of, how do you say in English, like placebo? No? Like some particular model for you to build some form of meditation. But it doesn't mean that you already are there or are that particular. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself gives this example that in some of these cases, the disciple receives that information in a general way, but the guru, and in time the disciple will tell the guru, I don't feel that comfortable with this particular. Can we adjust that? Okay. We adjust here this detail. Now it fits better. Okay. Continue your meditation. So the point is, that's still not something fixed, but it's just like some model that you can to facilitate meditation, as my Guru Maharaj will put it. Which again, we are not against that. If that's really rendering some purpose, it's okay. You have to judge the tree by its fruit. So of course we have to see that. How does it work? But what I was also want to mention is that regarding this idea of specificity in bhajan, I will say that first of all, the main important thing will be like to one as a sadhaka, we should increase our our commitment with the practice, no, to become more specific in terms of what priority does bhajan has for me in my life, basically. Because in many cases we don't make bhajan, how much time we dedicate to that, how much effort we put, not to criticize anything or anyone, or to make anyone neurotic, but just to be objective with ourselves, which is the time, focus, effort, sense of importance assigned to my bhajan on a daily basis. And how can I make that more specific? More specific doesn't mean, again, give me more details and information, but concentrate my time, energy, focus, sense of importance in a more deep, condensed way on a daily basis. How I commit myself more to the practice, basically. How I shift my focus more into the search for anubhav, no? For experience. I want to have some experience through my life of bhajan. I just don't want to conduct myself in a formal way, just like being a general. I mean, again, this is something that has to come naturally. I'm not just criticizing anyone. You should be more committed, but just if we want more specificity, that's a way of speaking about that. Increase your specific, increase your examination, self-examination. How we are, how much the things I'm speaking about, I'm practicing them. That's a famous verse in Bhaktisandarbha. I think we spoke the other day that actually it's from Brahma Vaibharta Purana, but Jiva Goswami quotes it in Bhaktisandarbha, which speaks about the guru with and without attachment, and the guru with attachment is someone, among other things, who does not conduct examination. So one may think that applies, he's not testing the disciples, which is one version of it, but another version is he's not conducting examination on himself. Because you are a guru means you are telling people what to do, if you will. But how much that person is asking himself, herself, how much I'm doing what I'm telling others to do, how much my own inner preoccupation is, how much I'm striving to make anubhav, to have realization in my practice, make that the priority in my life, how much I'm just somehow leaning towards a comfort zone where I can just be charismatic, sometimes nice words, receive my next ticket, nice prasad, everyone thinks I'm a saint. But I'm not actually making all the effort I could make to be where I should be. So I would say that's the main specificity that we should enter into before, tell me my name and dress and color and service. But if you are do not have this sense of, again, priority towards the time, effort, focus, sense of importance, we should ask that on a daily basis without being neurotic, but how much time I'm investing into my bhajan? How much effort I am putting in that time that I have assigned? How much focus I am putting? How much sense of importance do I give to those moments? Do I conduct myself just mechanically as a thing that I have to finish as quick as possible so I do whatever I like? I'm really giving myself in those moments? So we should get specific in that direction, I will say. That's the foundation. Whether you someone gave you Siddha Pranali or you're chanting Harinam and have the faith everything will come from that. Everything will come as long as you, as we do our homework as sadhakas, which is, again, to increase our specificity in that particular connection. So, anyhow, again, it's long topic, but some words in connection to that. Again, I wouldn't say that the system of Siddha Pranali is necessarily something wrong or harmful at all, but it requires to be given a certain way and certain guidance and certain, again, realistic support. And at the same time, you can not be following that and be just, quote-unquote, chanting Harinam, but you can also become complacent by doing that also. If you don't have proper orientation, you can just say, everything is in the holy name, I don't need anything else. Okay, let's see how much you play out your belief. Because we say that to the four directions. Nasti eva, gatiran jata, gatiran. Everything is there now. Okay, let's see. Show me how much you believe your own words and how much you... Because if not, we are using this idea of everything is in the name. Just an excuse to not look for everything in the name. And as a way of remaining complacent, I have the name. I have everything. Yeah, you have everything as long as you properly take advantage of that and act accordingly. If not, you are just using the name as a something to advertise yourself or to remain in a complacent zone. And say, oh, I have everything. The name came to my life. I don't need that Siddha Pranali. I don't need that. I don't need it. But you are not doing the proper thing with the name either. So, and maybe someone received proper Siddha Pranali and is doing things nicely. I remember last year I was in Radha Kunda for some weeks, and I was hearing one lecture from one Babaji from Shrikanda. It was a nice talk. He was explaining Bilab Kusumanjali of Raghunath Das Goswami, and at one point, and he's from this line that they receive Siddha Pranali. And he mentioned, if someone sits in Siddha Pranali and just tries to fill their daily quota, if you will, like, okay, now I have to meditate on this moment of the day, and now this lila, and now comes this lila, and now comes this lila, and now comes this, like in a more mechanical way, and then you conduct yourself in your lila smaranam like that, he said, that's Vaidhi Bhakti.
I remember. So,
that's not Raganuga Bhakti, he said. And he's speaking about someone engaging what we may say the most Raganuga Bhakti thing, if someone may think. But he said, it's all about how you are conducting yourself in that practice. That can still be something mechanical and not, your heart is not there. And of course, sorry, you can be chanting Srinam from the proper place, and that's way higher.
I remember meeting one devotee, and he had alarms set on his watch for the
3:36, 6, 8:24, 10. Madhyan lila, aparana lila, nisha. Okay, now Krishna's doing this with Ra. I'm sorry. Okay. Let's continue doing my thing. I'm doing it like this. I'm not condemning that. I mean, it's nice that you just remember what's going on, but to attain fluidity in sadhana and bhajan is not just set your alarm and you are there, no? Like put your mark, your, like when you were to work, okay, I'm here, I'm living here. It may begin in somewhat mechanical way, but because once one devotee told me, Maharaj, it's wrong if I kind of try to remember what Mahaprabhu is doing at each one of the 8 moments of the day, and maybe I may put an alarm to that. I say, no, it's not bad, but just do not think that that's the all-in-all of Lila Smaranam. It's not just the alarm is sounding, okay, now Mahaprabhu is doing that. Okay, now Mahaprabhu is doing that. Because if it's only gets there, it can, after a few, 3 days, 4 days, 1 week, you may know by heart all the things, and you may not even need an alarm, but you may react to that in a mechanical way also. And the whole idea of this meditation is that you inhabit those moments, and you enter there and serve there, and for that you have to develop, of course, a proper mood of service. That's the whole thing, to develop a proper mood of service, and for us, that begins in Gaur Lila. That's the entry gate to the Krishna Lila, and Gaur Lila for us begins at the feet of Guru and the Vaishnavas. So I think we always have to, in a realistic way, test ourselves where I am in terms of Dasya at the feet of Guru and Vaishnavas. And that will be the litmus test regarding all these other prospects that come to us, of course, in our lineage. But that there has to be a foundation of Dasya. Even if you say, I want Radha Dasya, okay, first Guru Dasya, first became a Das of your Gurudev, with all that it implies. It's not just external servanthood, it's full giving of ourselves. So, because yeah, Rupa Goswami said, Niyama Graha. That means to conduct in devotional practices basically mechanically. And he said, that will ruin your bhakti. So even if you are doing externally the topmost hike as esoteric uttam stuff, but mechanically, and you are not doing nothing to change that, probably it becomes more and more mechanic, more and more tasteless, more and more empty, and you get accustomed to that, and you may even cheat yourself thinking, I'm doing it. I'm in the real thing, the highest stuff, and you're just like a cyborg, like a robot, like ding, 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 ding. Okay, okay, that won't take you to Golok, for sure. They're not cyborgs in Golok Vrindavan. If you want to be a robot, some other place is waiting for you, but not Golok Vrindavan. That's pretty organic and natural. Saragrahi had some question? We have time?
I don't know.
We can try one more and I'll be brief.
Yeah, I think it will be short because you said quite a lot already.
Okay.
And I have a different question. It will be longer, but I will ask other. Because it's connected with this, like you said, that the Yashoda is not seeing bruises the way they are. And Balaram is, his seva is to look away. And yesterday you were reading from Vinod Bhagavatamrita about Rohini saying all these nice things about gopis as well. Even though I don't think we got to this like most esoteric topics, which means like Krishna fainted, and because I remember there was some like she knew about gopis, some things which I was like wondering how she knows all of that, because she's very similar to in one way to Yashoda, she's mother of Balaram, and so I'm just wondering how much she knew and about her Bhava little bit.
I don't recall in that section, at least in that section of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that Rohini was.
There was one said something that I have this quote somewhere, but I don't know where now. It was something like Radha knows to serve Krishna. If she needs to suffer for Krishna, she will do that, or something like that. I don't remember exactly.
From Brihad Bhagavatamrita.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I read it in Brihad Bhagavatamrita or in your book Sri Jagannath Ratha Yatra, but everything was quoted like the story from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, all of this what you were saying yesterday, and maybe this little bit more from somewhere else. So
yeah, I would prefer if we can search for the quote specifically and look that in context so we can address
but
that.
It wasn't very esoteric, but it was still kind of, it felt like she knows a lot about all the things which are going on with Gopi, because if Yashoda knows nothing, Balaram is not looking there, how she knows? Even like this little bit.
Yeah, because generally Rohini is depicted very much in the wake of Yashoda, basically. Yeah. She's kind of, secondary to her, but in one sense, one with her in her Vatsalya towards Krishna and Balaram, so generally you won't find this type of depictions that she's kind of knowing that. So I will prefer to see the specific quote, because I don't know, sometimes some acharya will try to make a particular point and make her say something highlight something. I will try to see the context. So we'll continue these days. Okay. Yeah, that was short. You're right. Okay, thank you so much for your time. And tomorrow morning we will be meeting again, if you want to come, at 10 for Brahma Stuti. Yeah, Brahma Stuti? Yeah. And then Monday, same time, Brahma Stuti again, right? Yes. I'm not mistaken. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Sadbuch Gaurangadev ki jai, Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Chaitanya Dham ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanand Hari.